presidents have sought to align themselves with a new plan for peace outside of God's plan. They have set themselves against God and His anointed. That is not a good place to be. It's not a safe place to be. So great is the antipathy of the United States State Department toward Israel and toward
Something is terribly wrong with the U.S. economy, and most of us want to prepare and protect what we've worked so hard for. But it's confusing, and you don't know where to turn. Seems like every channel has another high-priced advertisement selling gold. But who do you trust, and what do you buy? There is an answer to those high-pressured coin jockeys on TV. FAMC has been in the precious metals business for over a quarter century, but they're much more than coin dealers. FAMC has been the leader in financial forecasting and storm-proofing their clients from the economic storms we see today. Whether you're trying to protect your money, retirement funds, IRAs, business funds, or trusts, FAMC has the expertise to help you navigate these uncertain waters we're in and give you the peace of mind in purchasing the precious metals. Call FAMC today for a free economic package and storm-proofing your assets brochure. 800-325-0919. Deal with proven professionals today. Call 800-325-0919. 800-325-0919.
If you're living with diabetes and have Medicare or private insurance, here is some great news. Call United States Medical Supply today, and we'll send you the smallest glucose meter in the world, absolutely free. So small, it fits right on the bottle of Strix. And if you call now, we'll also send you this stylish, full-featured meter at no charge. That's two free meters. You can keep one in your pocket and leave the other one at home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here is not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of one of our favorite guests, John Loftus. And John worked for the Justice Department. He's trained as a lawyer, but he was employed by the Justice Department in the late 1970s and early 1980s, and one of the things he was doing was to track down the Nazi sympathizers in Europe and certainly here in the United States who were responsible for the extermination of the Jews during the Holocaust. To do that, of course, he had the opportunity to go through many of the very, very sensitive files in the archives there that adjacent to Washington, D.C., and his security clearance was several levels above top secret. He got into sort of files that most people could never get into because the people who were employing him wanted to track down the Nazi sympathizers responsible for the Holocaust. But, of course, there were other departments, but the Justice Department, that were actually supporting the very people that he was tracking down, and they knew where they were, but they were concealing this from John. Well, it took him quite some time, I think, to begin to put together all the parcels of this, but he's done this in a number of books. Actually, of course, initially he was restricted in what he could say because he had signed all these privacy agreements, and but eventually, of course, he wrote a book called The Secret War Against the Jews. It's a very important book, than The Unholy Trinity. And more recently, he has rewritten his book on what happened in Byelorussia, and it's come out now under the title America's Nazi Secret. John Loftus, thank you so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's Stan. You're one of my favorite interviewers. Always glad to be
here. Well, let's get into this book. We've actually done a great job in past interviews on America's Nazi Secret, and we can touch on some of those things as well. But I think this idea of the secret war against the Jews, because everybody knows, or at least think they know, that America is pro-Israel and the Israeli lobby controls Washington, D.C., blah, 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 blah. And yet, of course, as you point out, there are people within our State Department who are anti-Israel and who are doing everything they can to disrupt Israel, and they have for many years, and I think it's really coming to climax today. But you pick up the story. People get tired of hearing me tell the story. They want it firsthand from somebody who's had a chance to look at the secret files. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, in public, the American people have generally been supporting the democracies around the world, particularly Israel. I think it's the third highest country we donate money to every year. We keep up in congressmen and senators who make Israel a priority. And, the American people are not Israel's problem. The problem is that for the last century, the majority of our diplomatic and intelligence community has said, you know, whatever the Americans say in public about liking Jews, it really is in America's long-term national interest to be friends to the Arabs, because they have the oil, and it's all about the oil. It's, you know, if Moses had turned right and settled in Kuwait, we would have made them the 51st state. But as it is, oil is what it's all about. And America has been on the side of the Arabs.
And of course, but we can't let the American people know that, because many people are very, very sympathetic with the Jews, their plight, and with the nation. And of course, many Americans are Christians, and they believe that God plays a part in the land of Israel and the return of the Jews. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, John, go ahead. Pick up the story.
Well, what it comes down to is that the American Diplomatic Service.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
John's contention, although of course we talk about Israel being our ally and we want to preserve Israel, what we're really seeing is the fact that the State Department, supposedly motivated by oil profits, is really all in favor certainly of the preservation of the Arab countries rather than of Israel. And of course the Arabs really are sworn to the destruction of Israel. So let's see if we can how things are coming. John, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr. Stan.
Oh, that's ever so much better. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so happy. Yeah, it's a better line.
All right, fine. So let's go ahead with this whole idea. So basically, we have then on one side, we have, of course, the State Department and certain people in high positions in government whose loyalty is really to the oil companies. And then, of course, we have the superficial policy that most Americans believe, and that is that the Israeli lobby controls Washington, D.C. How do you address that? Now, you're an Irish Catholic, aren't you?
Yeah, I have no dog in this hunt. It's, I'm the result of 2,000 years of Irish inbreeding.
Oh, right.
My mom was born in Ireland. Although she says there's an ancient Irish legend that the Irish are one of the lost tribes of Israel. My dad said it couldn't possibly be true because the Jews can't drink and the Irish can't cook.
So. Well, anyway, let's get back to this whole idea that basically there are people within our State Department who are doing everything they can to actually undermine Israel. Now, when did this start, and certainly how can people, from their own point of view, understand that this is the real basis of American foreign policy rather than what we're told by the controlled, what I believe is a controlled media? So you're really, when you come up with a message like this, it isn't very well received because most people think it's ridiculous, and yet I think it's exactly what's going on today.
Sure. There's a good book called The Arabist. Someone tried to set out writing a history of the State Department's Arab desk and found out, to the author's horror, that these people were overwhelmingly anti-Semitic because they had been raised in Arab schools in the Middle East and grew up with this ingrained anti-Semitism, something that I saw repeatedly in the classified files. Back in the 20s and 30s and 40s, there were reference to oily Jews and these slimy Hebrews and just very racist terms. I think, on the other extreme, most of the people in our State Department are good and decent Americans. They don't believe in anti-Semitism. But to be candid, if you learn Arabic, you can be posted to 22 different nations, which is good for your career. If you can speak Hebrew, you can be posted to one. So there are certain, bureaucratic incentives for being pro-Arab in the State Department. But it really all came to a head during the Eisenhower administration. Eisenhower had as his Secretary of State John Foster Dulles, and his brother, Alan Dulles, was head of CIA. Now, the Dulles brothers were lawyers, and before World War II, the Dulles brothers represented multinational corporate investment in several countries. Bolshevik Russia, the Harrimans, the famous Democratic family had invested in the Bolsheviks, and their partners, the Bushes and the Walkers and the Rockefellers, had invested in the Germans, but all of them agreed to invest in what became the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And they actually loaned the guns and the money to take a militant group of Islamic extremists called the Wahhabists, after Dr. Wahhab, who back in the 1700s invented a heresy against Islam called, naturally, Wahhabism, or today it's generally known as Salafism. And this heresy against Islam was supported with Wall Street money. And that's how the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia was created. And the very first thing they did was to sign a treaty with the American oilmen. And that's how the American oilmen got their beak into the Arab Peninsula and ousted the British oilmen. And it turns out that Saudi Arabia was the most lucrative place where oil was found. So, and over the years, Aramco, the Arab American Oil Company, became, you know, the principal generator of wealth for the Wall Street crowd. And they all made a lot of money out of it. Now, unfortunately, many of the Arab nations, particularly the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, were vehemently anti-Semitic. They saw, as if they were the Arab Amish, they were so conservative that anything that was invented after the 9th century was considered to be against the Quran. In fact, the first king of Saudi Arabia was humiliated by making to publicly smash his phonograph player because that did not exist in the Quran. So we had a very puritanical, very right-wing society pursuing what's now generally described by Islamic scholars as a heresy against Islam, that everything has to be the way it was, you know, back in the 600s or the 700s. So that sort of group was easy to manipulate by the Western players. And Saudi Arabia and the Western oil leaders became coexistent on each other. Probably the best example of that would be the Carlyle Company, where you had many of the key Saudi players, including the Bin Laden family, who were the largest contractors who developed the oil industry and all the surrounding equipment. And their partners were the Bushes and people from State Department and CIA. And the Carlyle Group was a way of, how can I put this kindly, providing kickbacks for the purchases of oil from the United States. The Carlyle Group contracts always involved, not always, but pretty substantially involved kickbacks to different members of the House of Saud. It was how the House of Saud got their cut from American purchases of oil. And it's one of the things that enabled their American friends and their Saudi friends together to jointly manipulate and control the price of oil. The Saudis have recently said, as we know from WikiLeaks, that roughly 40% of the price of oil that we pay at the pump every day is purely the result of Wall Street speculation. It has nothing to do with the laws of supply and demand. And the Saudis, ironically, are asking our State Department, as the WikiLeaks cables show, to end this system of exaggerated price because the Saudis feel that it is causing the American people to stop buying oil and to look for alternative sources of energy. And I think the Saudis are right, but the American people are pretty much fed up. They know that when we buy a tank full of gas at the pump, if there's 20 gallons, that 1 gallon will go to support extremism. And among the extreme groups they have funded are what we now call terrorist groups in the Middle East. So, you know, imported oil from the Arab Peninsula is the principal source of funding for terrorism. It's higher than the sale of narcotics. It's higher than the stolen car rings. In fact, a friend of mine who was Clinton's head of CIA said, America will never win the war on terrorism until we stop importing Arab oil. And that's the bottom line. So the secret war against the Jews has been, by and large, a war fought because of America's economic dependency on cheap Arab oil.
And, of course, we've been systematically undermining the Israelis at time after time and certainly forcing them to make all sorts of concessions as far as the West Bank is concerned. Certainly, I think one of the most disgraceful things was forcing the Jews to withdraw from Gaza. And here was an area that had settled and been there for 30 or 40 years. It was productive, had wonderful greenhouses. It was providing jobs for the Palestinians. And we put pressure and forced them to force the Israeli settlers out there at Bayonet Point and suddenly seize their property, which was never paid for. And then, of course, the Palestinians were out of work. This became a center for Hamas, used as a base for lobbing missiles into the southern part of Israel. But this was really a result of America's foreign policy and pressure we put on Israel, wasn't it?
Well, you know, there I have to disagree a little bit.
All right, you go ahead, because I want your views on this.
All right, because the Israeli generals that I spoke to and the American generals I spoke to were all agreed that Israel should dump Gaza. It had a huge concentration of Palestinians. I mean, those were the, you know, greenhouses were the most expensive flowers in the world in terms of Israeli lives. Because to protect the few greenhouses and the tiny group of 6,000 Jews was costing, you know, 1,500, 2,000 Israeli soldiers to guard them every year. And every year, some of those kids would be killed. So I strongly supported Israel's withdrawal from Gaza as a smart move, Dr. Stan.
All right. How do you feel about pulling the settlers out of Judea and Samaria?
There I have more of a problem, but I may have a solution. There's some things in the secret war against the Jews that hopefully have taught us some lessons over the years.
All right,
and
fine.
We can't just beat up Israel anymore.
All right, fine. Well, hold on there. We'll get to the what this, because this is a major point today, and that is forcing the settlers out of Judea and Samaria. We'll be back in a moment with John Loftus. Go right ahead, John.
You know, I'm probably one of the few Americans that has walked through the city of Hebron. And Hebron is deep in the West Bank.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face.
I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download in print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden, all heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
A prosperous society, but whether it be Arafat or whoever their leader is, the boss, they're all corrupted. They're taking the money and using it for their own purposes. Hamas, I suspect, is doing the same thing. But basically, of course, John believes that other countries, foreign interests, have been bribing the various leaders, Palestinian leaders, and enriching themselves, and then, of course, creating a totally unstable situation. So the Palestinians, as a whole, live in poverty today, betrayed by their leaders, betrayed by foreign countries who want to use this whole area simply as a vehicle by which they can destabilize that region. And, of course, they're all pawns in the game. And they don't like being pawns, but there's nothing much they can do about it. And, of course, basically, of course, John was pointing out that here you've got the Jews, and they get the swamps in the north land nobody wants. The Jews drain it, and turns out to be beautiful. And then the Jews get the deserts in the south, and they irrigate it, and it blooms. And here's the Palestinians. They're looking at how well the Jews are doing, and the Jews are doing great, and the Palestinians are doing terrible. And the unemployment rate's 70% or 80%, and corruption is the order of the day. And you pick up the story there, John.
Well, you know, and for years, the Arab states controlled their populations by keeping them ignorant. 300 years ago, the caliphate, the famous, you know, ruler of all the Muslim world, decided to ban the printing press because it would be easier to rule the unruly Arabs if they were kept illiterate. So the Turkish caliphate plunged the Islamic Arab population into 3 centuries of ignorance. Now, prior to that time, you know, Islam was, well, certainly not, you know, what we would call an advanced modern religion. In many ways, it was back in the what we Christians call our Dark Ages. The Jews and the Muslims call it their Golden Age. It was a time where the very moderate Arab population worked with the Jews. If you wanted to go to law school or med school, you went to an Arab school and were taught by a Jewish teacher. It certainly, you know, was not equality under the law. You know, there was tremendous discrimination against Jews. But there was scientific advancement in the Arab world. The very words for medicine, magazine, algebra, all came from the Arabic of the period of the Golden Age. But once the printing press was banned, the Arab world slid into this trough of ignorance. And without education, the Arab populations could no longer sustain of the moderate to liberal interpretations of the Quran. They were taught a few lines by rote, by the most bigoted right-wing teachers, and that's how, you know, cults and heresies like Wahhabism evolved. And now what we have is all of a sudden, after 300 years, we have television. And for the first time, we have these huge Arab populations that are discovering, well, there's oil in our country. Where's all the money going? And they're learning that, for all its faults, Israel is a democracy. If there's a poll among Arabs as to whether they want an American-style constitution or a British-style constitution, the overwhelming majority say, we want what the Israelis have. They see it, and they know it's fair. This is television, for as much as we knock it, really is a revolutionary force. And after television came computers, and back in the era of President Clinton, they pioneered something with some American charities to train revolutionaries, young Arab kids in the Middle East. And 3 years ago, they set a deadline that each of them would try and launch peaceful revolutions in their country in the year 2011. So what we call the Arab Spring was actually planned by American taxpayers' dollars in covert operations, using charities to train people how to use Facebook and computers to waken that yearning for democracy that we see today.
But of course, the trouble is that we talk about democracy, but you overthrow the existing governments there, corrupt, no question at all.
Oh, yeah.
But of course, what's going to replace them, and that is my fear. I mean, everybody would like to see a free democracy, representative government. But of course, we see lurking in the background the hand of the Muslim Brotherhood, radical form of, and the only organized force over there. And I suspect when we have the elections, it'll be one man, one vote, one time.
Ah, yes.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
People are becoming more aware of the dangers of fluoride in their drinking water. We're offering you a proven way to remove more than 95% of this dangerous chemical, which threatens your good health. It's the Whole House Fluoride Removal System, available right now from Radio Liberty. This system will also remove aluminum, manganese, arsenic, lead, and most heavy metals. Your fear regarding these dangerous chemicals in the water you drink can be eased by getting more information from RadioLiberty.com. Go to RadioLiberty.com right now and find out all you need to know about protecting your home's precious water supply. Read the information about the whole house water fluoride removal system and order one. Free shipping is included in every purchase. You can also call 1-800-544-8927. Where's that information? RadioLiberty.com. That's 1-800-544-8927.
Carry out an Arab Spring, establish democracies, and that because the Islamic vote, will, the radical Islamic vote of the Muslim Brotherhood, will certainly only be 25%. However, the Muslim Brotherhood is very well organized. Now, the vote is coming in Egypt in September, and that will give us a pretty good idea of what's going to happen to that part of the world. And as I told John, I hope that he is right and that they do establish some sort of a moderate democratic regime. Because, of course, if I am right, and it would be a horrible thing to contemplate, all this effort only to replace the corrupt regime of Mubarak with perhaps even a more ruthless regime under the Muslim Brotherhood, which right now is presenting the velvet fist, but of course, or the velvet hand. But of course, behind that is the iron fist. Go right ahead.
Well, I should add that General Tantawi, who is the de facto ruler right now of Egypt, was the one that our Pentagon intelligence agencies all agreed would be the perfect candidate, and that's the one that President Obama backed. But, you know, no one knows. Let's see how the election turns out. We could be in for a real surprise. I think the Muslim Brotherhood is an organization that really dates back to the old Nazi era. Literally, it was the Arab Nazi movement that was what the Muslim Brotherhood began its life as.
And that is what people don't understand, is the relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood and the Nazi movement. And certainly, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood began in, I think it was 1928, but it wasn't
Correct.
Very long before they were aligned with the Nazis, and they have been more or less directly or indirectly aligned with that ideology since that time. But that's a program for another night. You go right ahead, John.
Well, I think that sometimes the right things happen for the wrong reasons. And there was a real fear among the pessimists that we're going to see a Muslim Brotherhood crescent from Yemen to Sudan to Egypt to Jordan to Syria, and that the Muslim Brotherhood will become the new rising power in that area. I'm kind of doubtful. I think that, and again, maybe I'm playing an optimist here, and the polls in Egypt will show in September which way it's going to swing. But, you know, I was talking to some friends of mine in the intelligence community about this whole, you know, border dispute. You know, what are we talking about with the 67 lines and adjusting it in Israel and the Palestinian by mutual agreement? Well, that's fine. Borders should always be set by mutual agreement. But I suggested something, and what shocked me was that both sides agreed I was right, that if we allowed the Palestinian people to vote where the borderline went, that would be in Israel's interest, because the Palestinian residents of Bethlehem and Jerusalem and all the border areas would vote overwhelmingly to be on the Israeli side of the fence. And this is a secret that's known to both sides. So, assuming the worst comes to worst, there's something else happening in September apart from the Egyptian vote, and that's when the Palestinians will push in the UN to override, you know, a half century of international law and declare Palestine a state according to the 67 borders, which is really the 49 armistice borders. Well, Israel should be prepared to defend itself, and I think they should offer, say, well, why don't we let the Palestinian people decide where the borders go? Let them vote whether they want to be in Israel or to be ruled by Hamas or Fatah. Dr. Stan, you will be shocked. Jerusalem, the Arab population of Jerusalem, will vote overwhelmingly to be part of the Israeli nation.
And I think you'd be very, very, very right, and a lot of people would be very surprised by that. First of all, the idea of the 48-49 boundaries, basically, that would mean, of course, Israel would have to give up the Golan Heights. That would mean that they would have to give up the Jordan River, as a boundary. That would mean, of course, Israel would be totally indefensible. And but, of course, I think that there are an awful lot of Palestinians who are interested not in the ideology. They're interested in a stable society and a prosperous society. And they look across the wall there at Israel, and Israel, of course, has prosperity. And then they go to their side, and I don't know what the unemployment rate is, but I've heard
it's staggering. It is unbelievable. 70% of Palestinian families in the West Bank and Gaza used to depend upon jobs in the state of Israel for survival, 70%. When the wall is completed, that will end the illegal migration of workers in Israel. And ironically, the Egyptian temporary government, that by opening up the border to Gaza, the Philadelphia line, has crippled Hamas, because Hamas received most of its revenue from tunnel taxes. Well, once the border is opened up and you don't have to have tunnels anymore, goods can be inspected and moved legitimately. Hamas is losing its major source of revenue.
And by tunnel taxes, that means the goods that are smuggled in through the tunnels. John, before we go on, would you like to get your website out? Now, we do carry your books, America's Nazi Secret, The Secret War Against the Jews, and The Unholy Trinity. We carry all three of them. We think they're important. I would point out that certainly the America's Nazi Secret is a rewrite of a book that was put out many years ago that certainly did not contain much of the information it does today. And a lot of these have not necessarily been widely circulated. They were not necessarily pushed by their publishers. Fortunately, a good friend of ours, Chris Milligan, with Trine Day, of course, has published America's Nazi Secret. Is that moving fairly well?
Yes, it is surprisingly well. I was delighted. I actually got a royalty check. I was shocked. And what's happened is that Chris has just done a really good job of getting the word out that this is an important book, because I wrote a book 30 years ago, but the bulk of it was censored out by the intelligence community. And, recently I got a letter from CIA saying you don't have to submit your books for clearance anymore. So what I did was quickly add a very lengthy introduction to my old book and a lengthy postscript, and say this is everything that was censored out 30 years ago, and this is what it means to you today. This is what the Muslim Brotherhood is about. And Chris was great. They'd rushed it to print before the intelligence community could change their minds. I am forever indebted to him for getting this book out on short notice.
And not only that, but, John, I honestly believe there had to be some people within the intelligence community who wanted your information out, and they allowed it out, certainly, and they wouldn't have contacted you otherwise. But, when you work for the government, you go along with the agenda,
yeah,
and you want to stay there, but somebody there was smiling on you to get this book out in print.
And
it really helps so much from my point of view to have an authoritative source, which I believe to be credible, somebody who had the highest sort of clearances, to tell us the true story of really what happened. I mean, the Holocaust, there's some people who say, well, look, the Holocaust could have taken place. After all, there were 6 million Jews in Germany. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that is ridiculous. But it wasn't the German Jews who were primarily, it was about 2 million Jews in Byron Russia, and the Jews in Poland and then Hungary. But they have all these reasons to try to confuse us, that there's no way the Holocaust could have taken place, and yet there's no question at all when you read John's stories, and I've talked to people who were there. We have a 4-tape set on the Holocaust, the real story, people who actually survived Auschwitz and the other places. And it's such an important thing to understand that our reality is constantly being manipulated. And I think that you contributed a great, great deal to our understanding of what really happened.
You know, the truth is what it is, Dr. Stan. It doesn't belong to the Democrats or Republicans. It is history, and the history belongs to us. And I'm trying to leave a trail of breadcrumbs because a lot of these files are going to be open. We still are awaiting the British files on the Holocaust. It'll be open in the next 15 to 20 years. And then the Russian files that are even more comprehensive. And we'll find out that the Holocaust was really the lowest point in humanity. You know, we've always had genocides in every ethnic group. The Armenians lost one-third of their population, the highest percentage of any genocide. Tens of millions of Africans died in the Middle Passage of slavery, and the highest total number of people died. But with the Jews, the Holocaust was different, because for the first time in the history of man, someone said, let's rub out a species, let's rub out part of the gene pool, let's kill every Jewish man, woman, and child. Let's kill all the babies. It was a crime so horrible it had never been conceived before. Prior to that time, genocide was always a means to the end. The Turks didn't want to kill all. The Armenians just wanted to drive them out of their country for economic reasons. British settlers didn't want to kill all the Native Americans. They just wanted to steal their land. The slave traders certainly didn't want to kill all the Africans. They wanted to keep as many alive as possible. But so genocide was always a means to an end, but not with the Jews. For the first time in history, murder wasn't a means to the end. It was the end. It was the goal. And that's why, for me, a non-Jew, I was so shocked as I read the in-depth knowledge that the Allied governments had of this atrocity while it was underway. And they lied about it, and they covered it up. If we could lie to the American people about the Holocaust, I think there are similar lies going on today about the merits of the Palestinian versus Israeli struggle.
Well, I'm sure there are many lies today, but this is, I think it's important to understand the power structure does lie, and certainly they covered up the Holocaust, and, what they're covering up today is even more frightening than Sydney, but certainly the tragedy that's unfolding today over there as far as the Palestinians are concerned, the Palestinians are victims of this. Individually, certainly their leaders have an agenda, and then the people who are behind this whole thing and funding, I mean, we're pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into funding the Palestinians, arming the Palestinians, military training for the Palestinians, so that there will be a war over there one of these days, and all these American-trained Palestinians will be fighting and killing the Jews, and then we're arming the Jews, and we're giving them a lot of money and weapons so that they will be able to defend themselves against the enemy that we've armed and trained. It doesn't make any sense, John.
No, it's crazy.
It's another agenda.
The best money we spent about $15 to $20 million a year training Arab students for the Arab uprising of 2011, for the Arab Spring. It was the most effective money ever been spent by the American taxpayer, and 90% of that money came from the federal treasury. That the people in Gaza are disgusted with Hamas, and as part of the Arab Spring, they've been having protests to throw Hamas out, to demand unity. In fact, Hamas grudgingly had to agree to a unity involvement with Fatah. And Fatah, it's the difference between, do you want to die by cancer or do you want to die by AIDS? I think a pox on both their houses. But I think that the people of Palestine are not Israel's enemies to the degree that their leaders are. You know, there was a point once where Saeb Erekat sat down with the Israeli leadership, and they hammered out a complete agreement, total agreement. You know, there would be trade-offs of land here and there, the border would be equalized, and, and when it was done, Saeb Erekat looked at this proposal and said, my God, if we do not have peace under these terms, that we do not deserve to have a nation. And he went back to Yasser Arafat, and Arafat said, no, no, we can't sign this. I don't care how fair it is. Because if we ever sign a peace with Israel, they will kill us.
And he's talking not about the Israelis, he's talking about the people running behind the scenes who are manipulating the Palestinians, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, Arafat knew that the people in the Muslim Brotherhood, the people, in those days it was Saudi Arabia and Iraq, now it's more Iran, you know, that the funders of terrorism would kill whoever went to make peace. The worst part of this horror has not been the Arabs killing Jews, it's been the Arabs killing Arabs who want to make peace. I mean, President Anwar Sadat, he was a man who started off as a Nazi during World War II, but yet traveled all the way to make a historic trip to Israel to make peace. And he paid for his life with that, and he was assassinated by an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, there's so many really amazing things that are going on. We did a program just the other day about a fellow named Tannenbaum, and he was a lieutenant colonel from the Israeli IDF, and he was captured by people up there in Lebanon by Hezbollah and being held. And so what does Israel do? They release 435 terrorists to get one man back. Now, why would you give 435 terrorists to get back one Israeli lieutenant colonel named Tannenbaum? Well, basically it's like catch and release. I mean, if you don't release the salmon or the fish, well, you're not going to have any more fish to catch the next time. And if we release all the terrorists, and then they go back to becoming terrorists. And it doesn't make sense from a logical point of view unless you understand there are people on both sides of the equation, both the Palestinian and, of course, on the Israelis, who want this whole charade to continue. And time and time again, if you read what's going on over there, you know, the Israelis release 100 terrorists to get 3 dead bodies back or something of the sort, and you ask yourself, what's wrong with this picture? What's wrong with it is nothing as appears to be.
I like the Israelis, but you and I are on the same page here. I think it was a terrible mistake for the Israelis to abandon their position of we never negotiate with terrorists, and to reward the terrorists 100-1 with prisoners. That's the worst possible example, and it should stop. I agree with you completely.
Well, we've never talked about these things before, but logic tells you, ladies and gentlemen, you don't. And this Tannenbaum, and Barry Shamus has an article up on this now. 435 terrorists for one a lieutenant colonel, Israeli lieutenant colonel, and I think there were 3 dead bodies they threw in, 3 dead Israeli soldiers, Israelis. Something's wrong with the picture. Well, I guess it's been John Loftus. We'll be back here in just a moment with John. Well, John, the hour goes by very, very quickly, but let's. Do you have a website or a site you'd like to put out for our listeners?
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download and print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
The Vatican played, and this certain priest played, in smuggling the Nazis out of Germany and Christmending them. I mean, we're talking about tens of thousands were smuggled to South America, and there's something called a rat line. Now, if this really took place, why doesn't everybody know? And the reason they don't is because it's secret. And but of course, John had an opportunity to actually get the information, document it, as much of it on tape. So basically, of course, we do have a four-tape set. It's called Operation Paperclip, which covers the Nazis who were brought to America. And, of course, we have another book called The CIA Doctors, and that goes into the same subject. That's a book. We have the four-tape set. I don't know if it's available on CD. You could order it. It might, maybe, but four tapes on Operation Paperclip. Some of the most vicious Nazis were brought to America, but tens of thousands of them were smuggled into South America with the full help and support not only of our intelligence agencies, but the Vatican. And the fact that most people have never heard of that simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. That is a book called Unholy Trinity. It's available from Radio Liberty along with John's other books, The Secret War Against the Jews and America's Nazi Secret. Important information that you're not going to be able to get through regular channels any more than you're going to be allowed to know how American corporations and American banks and American officials built up Adolf Hitler not only before World War II, but during World War II. That's covered in the books Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, Trading with the Enemy by Charles Higham, and certainly America's Nazi Secret by John Loftus, our guest this evening. So you can get three books on both subjects. Understand that your reality is controlled by the people who control the medium. In America, we have freedom of the press, and it's really lightly controlled, certainly by AOL, Time Warner, by Bertelsmann, by Viacom that controls CBS, by Disney that controls ABC, by GE that controlled NBC, they sold it to Comcast, and by Rupert Murdoch who controls Fox and the Wall Street Journal, and the largest Christian publisher in the world, of course, that's Zondervan, and they all tie into the Council on Foreign Relations. You want to verify it, Professor Ben Bickdickian's book, The new media monopoly, we can't carry it because they've made it very difficult for us to carry it, but you can order it through Amazon or on your own. The New Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bigdikian, a former dean of the School of Journalism at the University of California in Berkeley. I've talked to him. Couldn't get him to come on the program because he was a little hard of hearing, but certainly his material is great and goes into the interlocking directorates and interlocking programs of the major Council on Foreign Relations corporations, and they all tie into the CFR. They're all part of what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. So get the information, find out if it's true, and understand your reality is molded by the people who control the media. And Professor Bigdikian's book, which we do not carry, but you can get through Amazon or your local bookstore, The New Media Monopoly. Of course, you need to get my rundown on all of this material. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Go to our website, radioliberty.com, and certainly look at the articles we've written on this. Go up on the Internet. Just type in Radio Liberty, A New Media Monopoly, and Control of the Media. The information is there. You need to check it out, find that's true, and then if it is, you've got to become involved and help us get the public informed. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, former senior editor of the New American magazine, and certainly now, of course, he writes his blog, and he writes my newsletter. He has a radio program, and he is certainly one of the most astute observers of what's going on in our society today. William, how are you tonight, and what are we going to be talking about?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing very well. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to be with you. And I want to pick up the story of Jose Guarena again. We talked about it the last 2 weeks. This is something I think we're going to be talking about, or at least we should be talking about for the foreseeable future.
Well, now, what happens, what have we found about the rifle that was there? Was that his rifle, or is there some question as to where the rifle came from? And for our listeners who don't remember the story, this was a young man, certainly is a very hard-working Marine veteran, 2 tours over in Iraq. He comes home, he's asleep, he just finished a 12-hour shift. He's working for for his wife and his two children, just trying to fulfill the American dream. Suddenly there's a group of men, armed men outside. He's awakened. They're breaking into the house. He doesn't know who they are. He may or may not have had a rifle. We'll have to get the story on this, but of course he doesn't get an opportunity to fire or do anything to defend himself. He's gunned down by, oh, I don't know how many bullets, but anyway, he's 20, 30, 40 bullets hit him in a pool of blood. But then, of course, after he's been mortally wounded, they block any access to health care. The medics are there immediately. The wife has called them. But the brave police will not allow the medics go in to administer first aid to this individual, get him to the hospital, try to save his life. They wait an hour and a half, while he bleeds to death, while they're cowering outside. Nobody will go in to find out what's happened to this man they've killed with a few slots of bullets. But you pick up the story and tell what have we learned with him?
Unfortunately, we've not learned any details about the rifle that he supposedly had, that is to say, Jose Guarena supposedly had at the time that the SWAT operatives broke into his home. His wife said she'd never seen that AR-15 before. She said that it had been thrown down next to his body. That was what she said to an investigating detective just minutes after this incident, just, I think, minutes before she found out that her husband had died. She wasn't aware that her husband had died at the time that her interrogation began. And the most interesting thing about this interrogation, apart from the fact, of course, of treating her like a criminal suspect, they Mirandized her. They repeatedly Mirandized her. They tried to tell that she wasn't under arrest, but that she wasn't free to leave, which means that she was under arrest. Anytime a police officer detains you and questions you, you are under arrest. That's something people need to understand. That's why you don't talk to the police. That's simply a common sense precaution that people take, because the police are your adversaries. Their purpose in talking to you is to find evidence to use against you. It's not to clear you. They're not there to help in any way, shape, or form. That's not to denigrate police officers, just to explain the necessarily adversarial nature of any encounter you have with somebody who's invested with purported authority to kill you if you leave without his permission. And that was the situation Vanessa Guarena was in. But she didn't know at this point that her husband had died when she was talking about the rifle supposedly found next to his body.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, William, we go right ahead.
Vanessa Guarena, during this interrogation, was asked all kinds of detailed questions about what was in the house. That's the part of this entire repulsive vignette that I find most fascinating. Because if they had a legitimate search warrant, if Jose Guarena were actually a legitimate criminal suspect, they'd have some idea as to what they would find in there. They wouldn't simply go on a fishing expedition using a SWAT team as the fishermen. And they certainly wouldn't be under the necessity of talking to this traumatized and horrified wife to find out what was in the house. And the method of interrogating her was just repulsive. They were saying, in effect, we're going to find what's in there anyway, so why don't you tell us right now? We're going to find out what's in the homes of your family members. At least, I think, three other homes were targets for SWAT raids that same morning. And they were treating her as if she were, once again, a criminal suspect with guilty knowledge and trying to get her to say something that would incriminate herself. Bear in mind, this is a woman who just saw her husband's bullet-riddled body. She thought that he was alive. She was just told halfway through this interrogation that he had died. And she was aware of the fact that nothing had been done to provide him with medical aid. She had called the police when the SWAT team arrived. Then she called 911 trying to get the paramedics to arrive. She explained to the paramedic dispatcher that her husband had been shot by the police, in spite of the fact that the 911 operator was telling her to call the police. He said, "The police are here. They're the ones who shot my husband." The paramedics arrived about 5 minutes after the shooting. They weren't let in for an hour, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan. The SWAT team sent in a remote-controlled robot to prod and nudge the body while it died to make sure that Jose was dead. Jose was found, I don't know whether he was still alive at this point, by his 4-year-old son, who had been left in that house alone with his father, his dying father, after his mother went out to plead for help and she was grabbed and thrown to the ground and brutalized by the police on the scene. And the thing about what she said originally concerning that rifle is something that has not yet been nailed down. We are told that a search of the home found a rifle, but we were not told whether it was the rifle that was supposedly used by Jose in the confrontation with the SWAT operative. That rifle still had its safety on, so he didn't fire a shot, and he couldn't have fired a shot. And that, plus the fact that his wife originally said she didn't see the gun any time before that morning, and the gun had been thrown down by his body, lead me to think that one possible and plausible explanation was that he had been killed in his underwear while he was completely unarmed, and that the SWAT team had used a drop gun or a throwdown gun in order to create a narrative in which he shot at them. And of course,
hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Chris William is simply going into what we know about the unfortunate death of this young man, a Marine veteran, actually tours over in Iraq, who is gunned down in his own home by a SWAT team that's looking for, well, we don't know what they were really looking for, but of course we have a war on drugs. This war on drugs is being used to justify all sorts of police excesses. We have lost the war on drugs. This is last week why an international police organization said we've lost the war on drugs. Let's give it up. We're doing far more harm than we are good. And this is really true, because this is being used to justify SWAT teams which violate the Fourth Amendment, which violate the Fifth Amendment, which allow them to break into your home and not knock on the door and present a warrant and ask to search the home, but violent entry into a home, which of course says would tend to promote a violent response. You do not know who's breaking into your home.
Exactly.
I mean, you do not have time to think about this thing. And as we pointed out last week, certainly if you are put into prison today, you can get any type of drug you want. You want cocaine, you want marijuana, you want morphine. They're readily available in all of our prisons. And if you can't keep drugs out of our prisons, how could you expect to keep them out of society? And basically, are we going to actually establish the same sort of situation in society that we have in our prisons? Are we going to have certainly armed guards at every corner, you know, and even with armed guards posted all over the prisons? There's still readily available drugs. And so basically what we're doing in the name of fighting a war on drugs is we are relinquishing our freedom. We had a war on cancer. We have far more cancer than we had when the war started. We had a war on poverty started by Lyndon Johnson. We have far more poverty than we had then. We had a war on drugs, and we have far more drugs. And we have to ask ourselves, are they really fighting a war on drugs, or are they using this as a justification to take away our freedom? And we can ask that if one person dies because of this war on drugs, is it justified? Go ahead, William.
There's a lot that you just said that is of direct relevance to the Jose Guarena case as sort of a paradigmatic example of the consummate stupidity, foolishness, and needless death that are associated with the so-called war on drugs. And I'd like to talk a little bit more about the larger question of why there is a war on drugs and whom it benefits. The thing that I find most remarkable about this particular case, you mentioned, Dr. Stan, that anybody who's an inmate in a prison can receive drugs of any quantity or type that he desires as long as he's able to work the marketplace. The thing is, we already live in a prison society, albeit not one that is always and every place as intense as any institutions in which people find themselves, any of the cages that people find themselves in after the government has decided to withdraw what few liberties we still enjoy. I've been reading the affidavit in support of a search warrant that led to the raid on May 5th. That was actually published today as part of an ongoing document dump from the Pima County Sheriff's Office. And there are two things about that affidavit that I find remarkable, the first of which is that it is a tissue of excuses for the lack of actual evidence. There's a lot of talk about the fact that some people in Jose Guarena's extended family and his older brother as well had narcotics convictions in their backgrounds. Jose Guarena was never charged, never brought to trial for any narcotics-related convictions. He was arrested once at a traffic stop that had supposedly some kind of a marijuana nexus to it, but he was never charged in that instance at all. What triggered this investigation, it lasted 2 years, was a traffic stop that occurred after Jose and I think his brother and another associate had gone to a Best Buy or a Big Lot shopping center and bought a large quantity of Saran wrap. And they had been under surveillance by ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, by the DEA, and by state, local, and county sheriff's department personnel because of suspicion that some people in their extended family neighborhood have been involved in narcotics trafficking. And so they went to a local strip mall and bought Saran wrap, and this was seen as evidence of narcotics trafficking because Saran wrap can be used to shrink wrap increments of marijuana in order to conceal their aroma from drug-sniffing dogs. It can be used for other purposes as well. After the raids on May 5th, one of the targets of those raids being the home of Jose Guarena's mother, it was discovered that her furniture was wrapped in Saran wrap. I don't know why they would do that. Perhaps she has a certain fastidiousness about dust on the furniture. Maybe she was going to transport the furniture somewhere. Who knows? They didn't find drugs secreted inside the furniture, and so obviously they were not going to be using those as receptacles or transport receptacles for narcotic smuggling. They'd wrapped the furniture in Saran wrap. So they discovered that they weren't trafficking in drugs, they were trafficking in furniture, if you will. But that's what started this whole process, where you have a 2-year intensive surveillance of these people. Everything they did, everything they owned, their economic activity, their employment, their associations, their phones were tapped. All these things were subjected to the scrutiny of the local police, and I use local in terms of geography. They're not locally accountable, for heaven's sake. But they were living in an open-air prison society where they were constantly under scrutiny by armed people who, at a time of their choosing, as we found out on May 5th, can end their lives with violence. That is a prison society, however you define it. And once again, this affidavit in request for a search warrant, in support of a search warrant, is remarkable for the constant litany of rationales and pretexts it offers for the non-existence of evidence. It reminds me quite a bit, in terms of its broad outline, of the case that's been made either before or after the fact for the invasion of Iraq. No, we can't find the WMDs, but it certainly looked like he had WMDs. There are people that suggested that he had WMDs. We heard hints and insinuations from informants that he might have had WMDs. And when we got there, it looked like they'd been hiding the WMDs, and gee golly net, it looks like they were shipped off to Syria. But the point is, we really thought they had WMDs that justified the war, when, of course, that wasn't what they were trying to take care of in the first place. That was a rationale, not a problem.
Well, now, basically, what did they get from the telephone surveillance?
Nothing. They found out that these people met together, that they would visit each other, that they'd make rounds of local restaurants and businesses.
But if, you know, if it's your mother and your brother, why you said to you, really so suspicious? If the brother was involved in drugs, did that mean that Jose was involved in drugs? And did that justify,
yeah,
you know, simply this type of invasion, you know, this type of armed breaking into their home with rifles pointed, armed rifles, you know,
yeah,
loaded rifles, and then getting him down, you know, certainly, when, of course, he hasn't fired a shot at them.
Yeah, of course it doesn't. But the point you make about the fact that he was related to somebody with narcotics convictions brushes up against a point that not many people appreciate about one of the sort of obscure elements of the Constitution, which deals with bills of attainder and what is called corruption of blood. Corruption of blood was a doctrine that you shared the guilt of a family member with respect to treason or other serious crimes. The principle being, of course, that under the Constitution it is impermissible to punish somebody because of the crimes of a relative. And it's impermissible to treat somebody as a criminal suspect on account of criminal suspicions that attach to a relative. And so it doesn't surprise me that given the fact that the warrant that they executed was completely defective and inadmissible and improper, according to the Fourth Amendment, that they were operating, if you will, on the principle of the fruit of the poison tree here, and the poison tree was rooted in the soil of corruption of blood, which is another completely improper concept in practice according to the Constitution.
Well, now, basically, of course, did the warrant stipulate what they were specifically looking for, what specific items, and who they were looking for?
Well, on the warrant, there are, well, forgive me, the affidavit, they've still not unsealed the warrant, and they've not identified the judge who issued the warrant, but there are 12. There's an even dozen entries here in terms of what they're looking for. The following items to show money laundering, conducting a criminal enterprise, possession, distribution, transportation, sale of illegal controlled substances, and or conspiracy to accomplish the same. And then there are 12 separate categories, and they talk about books, records, receipts, notes, ledgers, financial institution records, cashier's checks, United States currency, telephone address books, caller ID boxes, telephone records, cellular telephones, all income tax returns, indicia of occupancy or ownership, or including but not limited to keys, utility bills, etc., photographs or undeveloped film of individuals, property, and illegal controlled substances that could reveal the identity of co-conspirators. And of course, number eight, you go down to number eight on the list before you find marijuana, cocaine, or other illegal and or controlled substances, including materials used in packaging. Ah, there you go. Saran wrap would qualify. Materials used to packaging would include saran wrap under item 8 here. 9, firearms. 10, entry into safes, locked boxes, which may contain evidence of money laundering. 11, all the documentation or records described herein, whether stored on paper, computer, video, word processing, electronic storage, etc. And then 12, in case they've forgotten anything, any other fruits, instrumentalities, and evidence of the crimes in violation of Arizona narcotic drug laws and conspiracy to commit the same. In other words, anything we find could be considered evidence. That's not a warrant. That is to say, a document drawn on that affidavit would not be a warrant. It would be a writ of assistance.
Well, but what about the warrant? Was there a warrant? Had this been turned over to a judge and was there a signed warrant?
We're told that there was a signed warrant, but it has not been released. It is still sealed.
Why would they seal it if there's nothing to conceal? Why would they conceal it?
Well, yeah, it's, once again, another instance of how these people who constantly tell us if we have done nothing wrong, we have nothing to hide, how they are furtive and they practice concealment because of guilty involvement in actions that have to be considered criminal. There's a dead man here who was an innocent victim of armed aggression by the state. I think the facts speak for themselves.
Well, now, did they find any evidence of drugs?
No.
Did they find any evidence of criminal activity?
Not at Jose Guarini's home, no.
Well, okay, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Go right ahead, William.
You'd ask Dr. Stan if there...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
Wart, we do not know. The affidavit covers everything. It really has no proof of anything and apologizes for having no proof. But they said they have a right, if they really think there's a problem, and if they can convince a judge there's a problem, to get a warrant and search the house. But why would you send a SWAT team? Why wouldn't you knock on the door and say, we are here, you know, we have a warrant to search your home, and we are coming in. And that would be a legitimate way to do it, rather than break down the door with all these people with automatic weapons. So basically, when you have an automatic weapon, you're pointing at somebody. Why, there's always the possibility why one of those weapons could discharge and kill somebody. But go ahead.
Or that many of those weapons can discharge a total of 71 times and perforate an innocent person 22 times and send high-velocity rounds through the rear of the wall of a house that abuts several other homes, thereby endangering other innocent people. Here are a couple of things by way of accentuating the point you're making, Dr. Stan. Michael Story, I mentioned him a minute or two ago, he's the guy who represents the police union there in Tucson, said when asked about this 2009 arrest of Jose Guarena that resulted in no criminal charges against him, he was asked by KGUN television, did the SWAT team know about this incident as they were approaching the house and doing what they did on May 5th? No, Story replied, they didn't know anything about it, and they didn't even know Guarena would be in the house at the time they approached. So why send a SWAT team? If they think that they're going to be breaking into a home that is occupied by a 24-year-old woman and a 4-year-old child, that's bizarre and inexplicable. Unless the objective, and this is one possibility, was to try to terrorize the wife into becoming an informant. I honestly suspect that's a possibility, because that's how they were treating her after Jose was dead. I think they were surprised to see Jose in the home. I don't know whether or not he had a weapon at the time. But the only reason you'd send a SWAT team to attack a home that is occupied by a frail, lovely little 23-year-old woman and her 4-year-old child is if you want to make some kind of an impression on that woman.
Well, basically, of course, it is sometimes police actually take a throw-down weapon just in case gets killed so they can cover themselves and justify the shooting so that they won't be held responsible for injuring or murdering somebody. I mean, would police do that sort of thing?
It's been known to happen, and it happens more frequently than some people would be comfortable admitting. This is something, by the way, that actually started back in the 19th century in New York before Teddy Roosevelt was appointed the commissioner of police. And all he did as police commissioner was to take the two most notorious examples of corruption from the force and put them on pensions and get them out of the force. That was the only thing that Teddy Roosevelt did that was of any consequence. But at the time, the police in New York practiced what has to be considered street-level extortion. And one of their preferred tactics back then was to plant evidence on people in order to turn them into assets that they could use to build their little empires of crime. The police in New York City, the NYPD, started out basically as sort of the armed affiliate or appendage of Tammany Hall. What they were doing was they were acting as ward healers for the Democratic Party machine in New York City. And to that end, they had very few scruples about using whatever influence they could to reward their cohorts in crime and punish those who impeded their ambitions. They were running entire rings of vice. You're talking about brothels and drug dealing and things of that sort. Drug dealing at the time was largely not a criminal offense. Not many narcotics laws existed in any state or city before about 1910 or so. But they were running their little empires of crime and extortion and graft, and they started, the NYPD units and precincts started in the 19th century planting evidence, and that include knives and guns and other weapons that would be used to frame people, to justify after the fact the illegal use of force against innocent people. And I have enough friends who are retired or even active duty law enforcement who confirmed to me that drop guns and drop knives are actually more popular than drop guns. Drop guns are not particularly easy to conceal, but you can conceal a knife. That's actually fairly commonplace. It's been done over in Iraq as well. There are people who will keep, in Iraq and Afghanistan, keep drop guns on hand to turn a dead Iraqi into an insurgent after the fact, or a dead Afghan into an insurgent after the fact. The same thing may have happened here, but I think that the wife may well have been the target of this whole operation.
All right, so we really don't know. It could very well be that Jose did have a gun. You know, he's a combat veteran. Anyway, of course, we'll be back in just a moment here. What really bothers me, though, is the fact that the police are putting out all sorts of information to try him in the media, rather than, of course, withholding information until all the facts are available or he has the right to defend himself.
Talking about the fact that it was eminently possible to conduct a conventional arrest and search involving Jose Guarena and his premises, on the very last page of the affidavit in support of a request for search warrant, we read the following. During the SIU surveillance, SIU is Special Investigative Unit of the Pima County Sheriff's Office, during the SIU surveillance concerning the aforementioned subjects, that is to say Jose Guarena, his brother Alejandro, and numerous others, they were not observed handling or even in the proximity of narcotics. And yet, he goes on to say that this was a major drug trafficking organization. They were never observed handling or even the proximity of narcotics. So how did this individual profess to know that this was an actual drug smuggling ring? They didn't know that. On the page before that, we read the following. In summary, this group of individuals has been surveilled for a six-month period, and certain facts about the behavior have been established. There is no pattern to suggest that a legitimate work routine exists. No one ever went to a place of business and stayed for a significant amount of time. That's not true. They had just said a couple of pages earlier that Jose had a job at the Asarco mine, and that he worked 12 hours a day on shifts that would last a week, 1 week on, 1 week off, etc. And then he says, with the exception of Miguel Rodriguez, who works for DirecTV, no one was ever seen wearing a work uniform. Department of Economic Security reports, for the most part, that these individuals do not have the income to support their assets. That wasn't true of Jose, once again. He had a very steady and fairly well-paying job. But the point is, they'd been under surveillance for how long? 2 years, intense surveillance for 6 months. They understood his work habits. They knew where he went, when he would go there. It would have been a very simple thing to interdict his travel, to take him into custody, and to ask him questions, or to arrest him if there were suspicion, reasonable suspicion, that he was actually involved in a narcotics ring. But on the very last page, once again, they said that he was never observed handling or even in the proximity of narcotics. They didn't have the evidence. They had to manufacture evidence in order to break this drug smuggling ring that they just knew existed without proving it. Once again, I think that explains why the SWAT team was used. This was an act of state terrorism. They wanted to terrify somebody into turning in order to make that person a witness against Jose and then...
Hold that thought, hold that thought. Well, this is William, our guest is William Grigg, and we're talking about the tragic death of this young Mexican-Spanish boy, a two-term, two-session veteran of Iraq and Marine, and he is in his own home, and these people break into the home, and they shoot him dead. But then this could have been a mistake. I mean, certainly I can understand the emotional response. But then to withhold medical care for an hour while he bleeds to death, and not one of them has the courage to go back in into the room to find out what's happened, to keep the medics out. That, of course, is unconscionable, and there is no way you can justify that. They are frightened, ladies and gentlemen, because of the implications of this. They are responsible for his death. Not only did they shoot him, but they withheld medical care. That, to me, is the crux of this whole story. Now, before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your blog, how they can get to your radio program, and how they can instantly get to your PayPal button.
Dr. Stan, thank you. My blog is called Pro Libertate. If you Google Pro Libertate, P-R-O-L-I-B-E-R-T-A-T-E, chances are that'll be the first return. If you Google it in connection with my last name, Grigg, I'm pretty sure that'll be the first return, or go to it directly at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedominourtime, one word, .blogspot.com. I try to update it about three times a week, and my essays tend to be about 2,000 words in length. I'm trying to do journalism of first instance, which means it's a little more labor-intensive than a lot of what goes on in the blogosphere. Occasionally I'll do a pure piece of commentary, but I try to do something that represents, once again, an original contribution to the discussion of a given issue or subject. That's Pro Libertate, the blog. My radio program is also called Pro Libertate. I like that phrase. It's Latin. It means for freedom. It's on from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock Central Time every Sunday afternoon on the Liberty News Radio Network. LibertyNewsRadio.com is the web address. If you go to the website, Liberty News Radio, you'll be able to find a list of terrestrial stations that carry the programs broadcast by that network. And also there are ways that people can listen to it by way of live streaming, or they can subscribe to the podcast. There, once again, a whole variety of ways that people can listen to my program and the other programs offered at Liberty News Radio. There are several other contributors there whom I esteem greatly, and there are some with whom I disagree, but I think pretty much everybody at Liberty News Radio has something interesting to say and provocative, and I'm certainly nobody who will shy away from an honest disagreement with people. That's LibertyNewsRadio.com. A lot of my material is republished at LewRockwell.com. That's LewRockwell.com. Mr. Rockwell is the president of the Ludwig von Mises Institute, and LewRockwell.com is probably the most widely read individualist website in the entire world, and it includes a blog section, which is on the right-hand side of the page, and I contribute items to the blog quite frequently. As a matter of fact, a lot of what I do is contribute. It takes the form of contributions to the blog at LewRockwell.com. That's where, for instance, I'll tease a lot of things I'm working on as larger pieces for Pro Libertate, and then a lot of my pieces of Pro Libertate are republished there at LewRockwell.com. For instance, in the Friday edition of LewRockwell.com, I think that the Saturday edition is already up, but in the Friday edition, the June 3rd installment of LewRockwell.com, there's an essay of mine entitled "He Didn't Say Infidels, Homeland Security Theater Continued," and that deals with a case that just popped up in the news a couple of days ago involving a 30-year-old and I think 23-year-old Iraqi. There are two Iraqis. They're young men, 30 and 23. They were arrested just a few weeks ago and charged with a conspiracy to commit murder overseas by providing weapons and money to what they were told was a group of Mujahideen who'd be laying booby traps and conducting sniper campaigns against U.S. troops and contractors, most likely contractors now, in Iraq. Both of them, actually, the older of the two, had experience as an insurgent, as part of the resistance to U.S. occupation in Iraq, and that means that he probably had hands-on experience in instances that involved the completely needless and utterly unjustified death of American servicemen in a war they shouldn't be fighting. And that's the real tragedy here, is that one of the glories of being a patriot and being a small r constitutional Republican, a Republican that is of the constitutional sort, is that you understand that the United States should always be the home team when it comes to warfare. That is to say, if we're going to be fighting a war, we should be fighting on our soil against people who directly threaten us. And that's not the case, and it hasn't been the case since 1898, no later than 1898, when America crossed the line separating a flawed but redeemable republic and what became, of course, an empire. And so these two Iraqis were involved in what they were told was an enterprise to raise money and provide weapons for people they considered to be fighting, once again, what from their perspective will be a patriotic war of resistance against a foreign occupation. If we, as Americans, were on the receiving end of a similar liberation from a prohibitively stronger power, we would probably return their generosity in exactly the same way that these two Iraqis reportedly were trying to return the generosity of the American government invading their country in order to remove a despot that had been propped up by Washington for over 20 years. I just want to take a second to enlarge upon this case because this says so much about the nature of the government ruling us. These two guys, once again, the oldest of whom was born in 1981, they have no memory of a country that has not been ripped apart by the chicanery or direct aggression of Washington. For their entire lives, their country has known war and horror and bloodshed and despotism and then foreign occupation. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they did what they did. The thing was, they were led into this country as refugees, and immediately they were placed under surveillance, and within a few weeks they were being lured into yet another of these FBI-scripted false flag terrorist operations. They were told that they were going to be raising money to send back to their homeland to try to fight against what they consider to be, once again, the foreign occupation force. In fact, they were being lured into the most recent installment of the FBI's Homeland Security Theater. The thing that I find interesting is that they were in Bowling Green, Kentucky. They were surrounded by infidels, and they weren't at all interested in killing Americans here. They were only interested in helping the war effort in Iraq. Now, if they were people who were really inclined toward anti-American terrorism, if they were seething and over-brimming with compulsive hatred for infidels as infidels, why would they be doing that rather than starting to wreak havoc here at home against a country and a people they supposedly viewed with implacable hatred and ideological hostility? Because what they wanted was they wanted their country to be left alone rather than wanting to impose Islam on Americans.
But don't you think, William, that they were wrong in what they were doing? In other words, basically, they had accepted the hospitality of our nation, and now, of course, they're raising funds to kill Americans. I mean, I would fault them for being too stupid. They deserve what they get because of stupidity. But and maybe they were cajoled into this, and I'm sure this was a sting operation, mm-hmm. as are all of these terrorist
That's
situations.
The point I'm driving at.
But it's sort of like this young man who set off the smoke bomb in Times Square, and he hates America. Boy, he's been talked into hating America.
Yeah.
And so he goes all the way to Pakistan. And he gets in touch with people over there who obviously are shills for our own government. They teach him how to make a smoke bomb.
Yep.
He comes back to the United States. He actually, of course, you know, builds a smoke bomb. He parks it in an SUV there in the middle of Times Square, honestly believing he's going to kill a lot of Americans. And, of course, then he tries to escape, boards a plane. He's going to go back again. Now, this boy is just plain stupid.
Yeah,
but he doesn't understand. He's been set up for this whole thing. And there's no question. I mean, suddenly the people over in Pakistan would know how to make an car bomb that would go off, not a car bomb that would create smoke. It's like the underwear bomber builds a bomb that won't go off. The shoe bomber builds a bomb that won't go off. These are all contrived terrorist episodes to be played out to create the perception on the part of the American people that we're really involved in a war on terrorism.
That's
I fault these people for being stupid because they're potentially dangerous, and yet, of course, we understand that they were talked into this. But we are responsible, certainly, for what we do, and if we actually set out to kill people, then we are responsible for what we've done. Now, that doesn't excuse this whole charade that's being put on, but I certainly don't justify what they've done in any way I understand it. But, of course, what are we to do with people that would be that gullible?
Well, as you say, to understand is not to justify. It's important to understand, even if, of course, you're vehemently opposed to what they're doing. And simply out of an understanding of human motivation, what they were doing was intelligible, if not defensible. But as you say, Dr. Stan, there's a certain almost criminal gullibility involved here in the behavior of these two, which once again underscores the fact that they weren't really a threat. If you're dealing with people who are that gullible, there is a limit to the damage they could do to other people. They could do considerable damage to themselves. What I find really arresting about this, Dr. Stan, is the fact that there were 19,000 Iraqis brought into the United States as refugees in 2009. These two guys were brought in. One of them, the older of the two, a fellow by the name of Alwan, had been arrested in Iraq in connection with an IED ambush or an attempted IED ambush of American troops. The bomb went off prematurely, and one member of the little cell there was blown to pieces. And his fingerprints were on file. His fingerprints had been found on the cordless telephone base that had been used in constructing this IED. And he was brought into the country as a refugee. He was really the guy they were keying on. It was he who recruited the younger guy, a fellow by the name of Hamidi, I believe, the 23-year-old. And so this 30-year-old guy was led into the country, and within a couple of weeks, they had managed to arrange a sting operation, or as I like to call it, a false flag operation, for this guy to get involved in. And that, to me, I think, is a pretty patent illustration of the economy, if you will, of effort that's involved in creating these false flag terrorist incidents that are contrived for the purpose of public propaganda. And I'm just curious to find out how many more of these we're going to see, and how frequently the powers that be bring people like that into this country for the precise purpose of staging these little propaganda exercises. Because these things don't always work out the way that people intend them to. I think that there's really good reason to believe, for instance, that the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing is an example of a so-called sting operation that didn't work out quite as planned because somebody missed a cue or missed a time change or some other technical detail went awry. There are plenty of people who have investigated this to far greater depth than I have who believe that the FBI was supposed to rush in and save the Murrah building at the last second, but they managed to miss their cues. And something similar happened in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. That's the sort of risk that they're willing to run with the lives of Americans in order to make the propaganda points that they're making here. But once again, this is a fascinating case study illustrating, as you said, that almost all of these so-called terrorist episodes have been orchestrated by the government supposedly protecting us from terrorism. And it really partakes of a sensibility very similar to the so-called war on drugs that leads to outrages like the death of Jose Guarena.
And that is an excellent analogy. What we have to understand is that we have an element within our society that is promoting this whole phony war on terrorism. There is no terrorist threat. The terrorists did not take down the buildings on September 11th, and the reason I know they didn't take down the buildings on September 11th, 2001, is because we're told the FBI had no idea who these 19 people were, had no idea they were just anything was going to happen, as certainly as Rice said, who would ever have thought that they would hijack our planes and use them as bombs, you know? Well, I don't know why. I mean, I know very well that they knew it was coming down. We even have an article that appeared about two or three months before on the Internet, Northwest Airlines, Sydney Hostesses, your website talking about Operation Bajinka, planned to hijack the planes, to use them to take down our planes, to use them to attack the World Trade Center. We know that Willie Brown was notified the night before. We know that someone, Rusty, was warned a few days beforehand. We know that the FBI claims they had no idea who was that was going to be an attack, who these people were. But the day afterwards, the very day afterwards, they had their pictures, they had their fingerprints, they knew their entire histories. But all 19 of them died. But six of them were suddenly regenerated, and they're living and well over in the Middle East. And you go up on the Internet, and you can put that in your search engine. Six of them are alive and well. Now, you explained to me how they could have been killed, and they're alive and well. And I think there's only that only happened one time about 2,000 years ago, when a person was crucified and died, and then, of course, came back to life 3 days later. But here's an example where six of them came back to life. And the government doesn't deny that's the case. They just go on to another discussion. I believe that the murderers of those people are alive and well in this country. I believe the Bush administration set up the 9/11 Commission not to find out what happened, not to reveal what happened, but to conceal what happened, because they interviewed 1,200 people in secret. Only 100 of them were allowed to be interviewed in public. And the testimony of the other 1,100 has been sealed for 50 years.
Yeah.
That in itself shows you what really happened that day. The murderers are there, and they set up these poor Iraqis. Yes, they're stupid. They deserve to go to prison for stupidity, just like the smoke bomber and the shoe bomber and the underwear bomber all deserve to go to prison. But what about the people who set them up?
And sorry, they should be in the dock right alongside them.
Right ahead.
Yeah, the people who set them up should be in the dock right alongside them, and the people who contrived the circumstances that turned Iraq into a charnel house really should be in the dock alongside them as well. And when it comes to the acts that they were involved in setting IEDs and conducting sniper raids that killed American soldiers overseas, if they're guilty of killing American soldiers on a battlefield, then they should be tried alongside the policymakers who sent those soldiers illegally into an aggressive war that our country shouldn't have been involved in, against a country that had never harmed or threatened us in any way. And that's just typical of the sort of things that this government does by way of aggrandizing itself at our expense and creating enemies by the millions and hundreds of millions that can be used as fodder for their malign ambitions.
They've recently arrested a gentleman, a Serbian general, for the murder of 5,000 Muslims. What about the almost a million Iraqis who've been killed? Well, who is responsible for that? It was a totally unnecessary, totally unjustified war. They lied to the American people to justify getting into it. Who is responsible, and why is there no cry for an investigation and a criminal trial of those who lied to the American people and killed all those Iraqis? William, you go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, before I conclude this evening, I want to make a very important observation about the so-called war on drugs.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download in print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.